from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, a special report in the aftermath of the Michael Brown grand jury return.
All 12 jurors were present for every session, and all 12 jurors heard every word of testimony and examined every item of evidence. They were instructed on the law and presented with five indictments ranging from murder in the first degree to involuntary manslaughter. Their burden was to determine, based upon all of the evidence, if probable cause exists to believe that a crime was committed and that Darren Wilson is the person who committed that crime. After their exhaustive review of the evidence, the grand jury deliberated over 2 days, making their final decision. They determined that no probable cause exists to file any charge against Officer Wilson and returned a no true bill on each of the five indictments.
That was Robert McCullough, the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney, Monday evening after the grand jury, considering his presentation regarding the killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, declined to indict the police officer who killed him, Darren Wilson. President Barack Obama went to the airwaves shortly after the grand jury's report was made public.
As all of you know, a few minutes ago, the grand jury deliberating the death of Michael Brown issued its decision. It's now come that either way was going to be subject of intense disagreement, not only in Ferguson, but across America. So I just want to say a few words suggesting how we might move forward. First and foremost, we are a nation built on the rule of law. And so we need to accept that this decision was the grand jury's to make. There are Americans who agree with it, and there are Americans who are deeply disappointed, even angry. It's an understandable reaction. But I join Michael's parents in asking anyone who protests this decision to do so peacefully.
Many questions surfaced immediately after the announcement, and there were still more questions raised after the release of a transcript of part of the grand jury proceedings. After the news was released, criminal defense attorney Patrice Sultan spoke with RT America.
What was interesting to me was the explanation of the facts that were presented to the grand jury, right? So if the issue was what degree of homicide should they charge here, then really what they have to decide is whether there was justification for the way that the officer acted. We didn't hear anything about the description of the perpetrator that he was looking for having a weapon. We didn't hear anything about Michael Brown presenting a weapon or making any threatening statements or doing anything that would cause an officer or a person exercising reasonable care to fire 12 shots at an unarmed black teenager. I mean, all we heard was that he turned around toward the officer, perhaps started moving toward him, and that there was a lethal response. And so it's unusual, or I guess it's difficult to understand how the jury would not at least return an indictment for involuntary manslaughter, which only requires a reckless action on behalf of Officer Wilson. And so I think that the evidence of 60 witnesses, which is quite unusual, had to have been presented to the jury in a way that that was designed to get that outcome. The concern is the equal protection of the law aspect of this, because what prosecutors generally do when they're trying to establish just probable cause is to put on an officer and maybe one other witness so that they can make sure that they bring an indictment on the highest charge possible. And then as they continue their investigation, whether they have help from the federal authorities or not, they can ratchet the charges down if they want to, but they can't really ratchet them back up later as easily. And so generally they put on an officer. The officer will say, you know, I talked to a witness and this is what the witness said happened. You know, this person was shot 12, you know, this officer shot at someone 12 times when there was no lethal threat presented, and will you please return an indictment for murder one? And they didn't do that in this case, and it does sound calculated. I think that they presented a lot of physical evidence, a lot of expert testimony that you generally wouldn't see, because that goes into sort of, you know, whether there was justification or not, as opposed to whether there was probable cause. We're not really at the affirmative defense stage or figuring out whether there was reasonable doubt or challenging, you know, the veracity of what the witnesses had to say. We're just trying to establish, is it probable that a crime was committed here? This decision ends the investigation. And so if there's anything else that, you know, if there's any other forensic evidence that hasn't yet been presented, that opportunity is lost for the family.
As the news spread, demonstrations broke out across the country from Boston, Massachusetts to Los Angeles, California, and Seattle, Washington to Washington, D.C., including a raucous rally outside the White House.
Hands up! Don't shoot!
Hands up!
Don't shoot!
Hands up!
Don't shoot!
In New York, one protester was arrested for allegedly throwing fake blood on Police Commissioner Bill Bratton and an aide at a Times Square rally Monday night. Bratton was standing in the crossroads of the world at Times Square. Later in New York, crowds of people marched on the Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Triborough bridges. The call went out for people to rally at 5 p.m. around the country. In New York, Sarah Flounders from the International Action Center spoke Tuesday about a planned protest at Union Square.
Today, all out, 5 p.m., Union Square, and all across the country. I think there are more than 140 cities now where people in outrage are protesting the Ferguson decision. There'll clearly also be people marching, leaving Union Square as the crowd grows, and this is a time for everyone to come out in force to protest this outrageous, racist decision, which gives cops free and clear authority to kill.
The Brown family's attorneys and supporters held a press conference Tuesday afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Attorney Benjamin Crump, along with my co-counsel, Attorney Anthony Gray, and Attorney Darrell Parks, and Attorney Pam Means, President of the National Bar Association. We will initially address this press conference, the family's response to the announcement by the prosecutor yesterday. Attorney Gray and Attorney Darrell Parks and myself, we objected back in August to this prosecutor. We even wrote a letter to Governor Jay Nixon requesting a special prosecutor to be appointed. We objected when he informed us the process that he was going to use that was different than anything else, different than any normal grand jury that you would have presented. And now, after we watched him last night and his comments, we strenuously objected to this prosecutor and this process. But this morning, after we, like all of you, went through as much of the information, I think it was described as a data dump, we went through as much of it as we could and saw how completely unfair this process was, we object publicly and loudly as we can on behalf of Michael Brown Jr.'s family that this process is broken. The process should be indicted. It should be indicted because of the continuous systematic results that is yielded by this process. And let's be very honest. Let's be very honest about this process. We have the local prosecutor who has a symbiotic relationship with the local police and the local police officers who sit in judgment whether to indict the police when they brutalize or kill a young person from our community. And normally, that prosecutor has no relationship or no regards for the young person of color. And so, as Attorney Gray and Attorney Parks predicted at the beginning, we could foresee what the outcome was going to be. And that's exactly what occurred last night. But it is awfully troubling when you look at what was released and you hear about the police officer who shot Michael Brown Jr. in broad daylight, the unarmed teenager, and you hear he testified for 4 hours, and you had to scratch your head, kind of like we all did, to say, when is the prosecutor going to cross-examine the killer of an unarmed person? A first-year law student would have did a better job of cross-examining a killer of an unarmed person than the prosecutor's office did. I mean, where was it vetted? Where was his veracity ever challenged? Where was his credibility ever challenged when you watched those 4 hours that he got to give a speech to this grand jury? You know, he told the detective testified, he told me he got hit 10 times violently. He told the grand jury he only got hit 2 times. But he said, and you all heard it, Hulk Hogan against a 5-year-old. Nobody questioned, well, officer, you're 6'4", you were 226 pounds. Michael Brown is 6'6", he wears 292 pounds. You mean to tell me that he hit you with such force as you were describing, that it was gonna knock you out, it was gonna knock you unconscious? And nobody held up the pictures to say, but that's not consistent with the physical evidence. Right. We object to this process because all across America, whether it's in New York, Los Angeles, California, Cleveland, young people of color are being killed by police officers, and the local prosecutors put together this fair and unbiased grand jury, and it continues to yield the same results. Now, I've been told that if you continue to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result, then that is the definition for insanity. And we say to the prosecutor, we are not insane. We know that our children deserve equal justice, just as any American. And we want the prosecutors, if they have a conflict of interest, and for the sake of the public trust, which is so critical to Ferguson and many communities all over America, we pray that prosecutors will say, we want people to believe in the system. And if that means appointing a special prosecutor who has no relationship with the accused officers, that you do so. The legacy of Michael Brown Jr. should be one, not where we just make a lot of noise, Mr. Brown. That wouldn't be the proper legacy to your son. The legacy to Michael Brown Jr. should be that instead of just striving to make a lot of noise, we strive to make a difference. And that difference will be changing this system where the police who are supposed to protect and serve us continue to kill our members in our community. And we have to really address this issue as one that, what scenario could we offer where they finally indict police officers for killing us? Isn't that the real question? So we beg you all again that we know it's frustrating, and we know that it's painful. It's painful to any parent, especially parents of young people of color, because we worry about our children every day. I mean, every day when we hear they have an encounter with the police, I mean, our heart just stops. And it shouldn't be like that. We should be able to expect the police to treat our children just like they treat any other children in any other community. And so, to hopefully really address this issue, we want the proposal for the Michael Brown law. That is the proposal that every police officer in every American city has a video body camera. So it would be transparent. And we won't have to play this game of witnesses, memories, and secret grand jury proceedings. It'll just be transparent. And we can see it for ourselves. And we can hold people accountable when they have interactions with citizens, because this system It's so unfair to the citizens, and we are all American citizens. And we ask that everybody, not just the entire St. Louis community, but all of America, join us in demanding change, making a difference for the lives of our children and for the sake of our communities, and especially for Michael Brown Jr., who is crying out from the grave with so many thousands of other people of color who have been killed by police, saying, "You all have to change this system." Attorney Gray.
I'll be very brief. I just want to remind everybody present, as Attorney Crump so eloquently pointed out, we said from the very beginning that the decision of this grand jury was going to be the direct reflection of the presentation of evidence by the prosecutor's office. If they present evidence to indict, there would have been an indictment. If they don't present the evidence in a manner to secure an indictment, then there won't be an indictment. So this grand jury decision, we feel, is a direct reflection of the sentiments of those that presented the evidence. We appreciate the data dump. We appreciate the fact that we got a chance to hear or read all of the testimony. We saw what was presented, but we didn't hear how it was presented. We didn't get a chance to hear the inflections in the voices. And the cynicism and the sarcasm and some of the questions that I read just jump off the pages at you. So it's all in the presentation of evidence, and I don't want anybody to be misled in any other way. I would also caution all those in the media that we still have an ongoing investigation. I'm not going to comment on very much of the evidence at all. I'm just going to ask that you have transcripts, read them for yourself. As I read the testimony of one person, Officer Darren Wilson, he indicted himself. Most of what he said didn't line up with the physical or the forensic evidence. You read it for yourself. You have it. It's right there in front of your face. And you know, there's an old adage that some people will say, if you really want to hide something, you're hiding in plain view.
Right.
It's right there for us to see.
Right.
Now, I'm just going to encourage the ongoing investigators to continue to do what they have to do, and we'll hold out hope that subsequent investigations would produce a result that reflects the way that evidence was presented. I would only say to you that over 50 witnesses and only 4 to 5 of them were relevant.
Right.
What was the other 55 for?
Amen.
If you already know going into it that a person didn't see the event, they already told you that,
right,
then why would you present them in front of the grand jury?
Amen.
What's the point?
Amen.
So it's things like that that just raises all kinds of red flags for us in this process. But we're going to hold out hope that at some point justice will be served, and we will at least have a presentation of evidence that is fair and impartial. And then we would allow the chips to fall where they may.
The situation facing black and brown men in the U.S. has recently caught the attention of the U.N. High Commissioner on Human Rights. As we've previously reported, family members of Michael Brown were at the U.N. hearings in Geneva earlier this month for the Committee Against Torture's review of the nation's record. The grand jury findings apparently caught the attention of the High Commissioner. Stephanie Kutrix reports from the United Nations.
A disproportionate number of young African Americans die in encounters with police officers, according to the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. Zayd Ra'ad Al Hussein was reacting on Tuesday to the decision by a grand jury in Ferguson, Missouri, in the United States, to not charge a police officer in the fatal shooting of an 18-year-old African American man, Michael Brown. The human rights chief also urged all protesters to avoid violence and destruction in the wake of this decision, which has reportedly already damaged dozens of buildings and shops. Stéphane Dujarric is spokesperson for the UN Secretary General.
The High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zeid Raad al-Hussein, said he was not at this point able to comment on whether or not the verdict conforms with international human rights law. Nevertheless, he said he was deeply concerned at the disproportionate number of young African Americans who die in encounters with police officers, as well as the disproportionate number of African Americans in U.S. prisons and on death row.
Mr. Djuzharik added that the High Commissioner called on U.S. authorities to conduct in-depth examinations into how race-related issues are affecting law enforcement and the administration of justice, both at the federal and state levels. Stephanie Kutrix, United Nations.
Larry Hamm chairs the People's Organization for Progress in Newark, New Jersey, the scene of a rebellion in 1967. We spoke with him by telephone Tuesday.
I think the most important thing regarding Ferguson right now is for people to show their solidarity with the people in Ferguson, Missouri, who've been fighting for justice for Michael Brown and fighting for reform of the police. They need our support, especially as the criticisms with regard to looting and vandalism and related activity, as that criticism tends to rise, and, you know, what will happen is that the media will shift its focus all on people's angry response and not focus on the problem that caused the angry response. And I think that we have to keep the focus on the problem, and the problem is the failure of the grand jury to indict Officer Darren Wilson, who shot and killed Michael Brown. Wilson must be held accountable for the death of Michael Brown. So at this point, I think everyone who has been making the call for the Justice Department to officially begin an investigation to determine if Michael Brown's civil rights were violated and to bring an indictment on civil rights violations against Wilson, I think that's the next phase, the step that we're in. And I think the call to put pressure on the Justice Department is the right call. And, you know, everybody in their particular state should be calling and writing and demonstrating at the U.S. Attorney's offices for their state. I believe each state, roughly each state, has a U.S. attorney who reports to Eric Holder. And we also need to be calling for Holder to direct that his U.S. attorney for Missouri begin such an investigation. Now, we know the Justice Department has been in there and has been having discussions with regard to reforming the police, but in one man's humble opinion, we shouldn't let the issue be shifted totally on to police reform. Yes, we all want police reform, and we all want something positive to come out of this very tragic occurrence, that is the death, the killing, the murder of Michael Brown. But at the same time, just because the grand jury did not indict does not mean the struggle for justice is over. We have to continue to fight to see that some type of justice, even if it's a modicum of justice, is obtained for Michael Brown. So in that regard, putting the call and putting pressure on the Justice Department to officially begin a civil rights violation and bring charges of civil rights violations against Wilson is, I believe, the right thing to do. But in the general struggle against police brutality, there's a Michael Brown in every black community and in every major city across this country. And what I think we should be doing is trying to link the struggle for justice for Michael Brown, which is a national case, even an international case, because it seems that the national media and international media have focused on that case, so be it. But what we need to do is link the struggle for justice for Michael Brown to local struggles. Like, for instance, in Irvington, New Jersey, we have the killing by the police of Abdul Kamal. Irvington is to Newark what Ferguson is to St. Louis. And Abdul Kamal was standing on Stanley Street He had a verbal confrontation with the police. He had his hands in his pocket. He was unarmed, black man, 30 years old. He was fired upon by three Irvington police. They fired 15 rounds. He was hit 10 times and killed on the spot. So we've been tying the struggle for justice for Michael Brown and for Eric Garner. We've been tying those struggles to the struggle for justice for Abdul Kamau. We have to create a kind of symbiosis between these local cases and these cases from other locales that have gained a national and international attention. And finally, we have to engage in sustained protest. The struggle for justice for Michael Brown is going to be a protracted struggle. It may last for several years, and we have to prepare ourselves for the long haul. Like long-distance runners, we have to pace ourselves so that we can get to the end of the race. But what that means is engaging in well-planned, ongoing activities all along the road to justice, all along the struggle for justice, until it reaches its conclusion. So that's what I see in terms of next steps.
Bernard White is a former longtime program manager at WBAI in New York and a longtime activist. We spoke with him by telephone on Tuesday.
Well, I think this one is different because I think for many young people, they will find this to be what I would call an Emmett Till moment, where they would, where they had expectations, skeptical of the outcome, but still wanting the outcome to be where this guy would be prosecuted. And when they found out that he was not going to be prosecuted, I think it has driven them to a new level of understanding of how this country works. And with that, there will be a level of response that I think there will be commensurate to this new understanding. And I think this one is a little different. I've been watching a lot of the coverage on television. Many of the historical civil rights organizations have lined up on one side, and it seems that the youth have lined up on another side. I think what has to happen in this particular case is not that, and it's obvious that these youth were not going to follow the old model of the civil rights organizations, but I think it's incumbent upon those of us who understand what is going on, the older, some of the adults, to sit down with these youth and provide them with some guidance into how they can respond, because there definitely needs to be a response. And I think that they're up to it. When you see that 103, 108 days of consecutive demonstrations took place in Missouri, you know that there's a level of organization there that is a bit different. They did not allow this to die down. And I think that they're going to continue to organize. And it is my hope that, as I said, this becomes their Emmett Till moment. Emmett Till was a young man killed in Mississippi that brought many of us in my generation to consciousness. And I think that this is what's going to happen in Missouri.
And finally, we close with this commentary from imprisoned journalist Mumia Abu Jamal.
The 12-member grand jury in Ferguson investigating the killing of a black teenager, Mike Brown, returned with no true bill, legalese for no charges, no indictment, no case, despite the fact that Brown was unarmed, no charge. The name Ferguson joins an ancient line of place names of pain, loss, and black death, places like Birmingham, Philadelphia, and now Ferguson. It'll have a meaning all its own. For young people, many of whom are new to activism, who felt compelled to hit the streets in protest of unbridled police power and legalized impunity, the challenge will be how to continue, how to fight on, and even what the fight is. Some, broken-hearted, will flee this ugly episode and try, perhaps unsuccessfully, to seal such a memory away. Others will grow in radicalism, convinced that this case is the very epitome of racist injustice. But Ferguson may prove a turning point, a point in time when the nation chose the wrong road ahead.
From Community Public Radio, thanks for listening.